Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Tucky.
Hello, people!
It's me and you again, Tucky.
Just the two of us.
We can make it if we try. No, that's my bad singing.
You and I.
That sounded terrifying.
That's supposed to be my sexy voice, so...
That was terrifying. I actually got chills down my spine. It felt like someone had just stepped on my grave when you said that. It sounded very similar to Jigsaw saying, "Do you want to play a game?
I've got Cluedo." excuse me. Done my voice in now.
So, we had some trailers drop yesterday, and the one that really got me was Godzilla. Godzilla 2, King of the Monsters. What do you think, Tucky? Are you excited?
I wasn't excited for the first one. The live-action Godzillas, ever since Jamiroquai gone deeper underground.
Oh, please, don't. We don't mention... No. Officially, that's no longer called Godzilla. Officially, that is just known as Zilla.
Yo, Zilla, my bro.
Do you know how I know that? Is because there was a movie called Godzilla Final Wars, and in that movie, Godzilla has to fight that version of Godzilla, who is just called Zilla.
Did they have Jamiroquai playing in the background just for a little...
I think he might
nod back to it.
I think he might have got stepped on. I gotta say, I like the fact that there's more emphasis on the monsters now, because we got to see Mothra, and you got to see the silhouette, the shadow of King Ghidorah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what direction they take it in.
Yeah,
there is a lot of potential, and a lot of the monster movie buffs out there will be. They'll be having their say on the internet, as they usually do anyway.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting how big these monster movies really are to people.
They're hugely popular.
Very popular. I mean, they've got calves, they've got kaiju kaffirs, and...
Yeah. I love the idea of Mothra in the Godzilla trailer. I loved the way that they were showing Mothra. I just hated the comments. People saying, "Oh, is Mothra a bad guy, like?"
It's one of the things when you're introducing a new audience into something that's really old and really special. And it's kind of like that thing where sometimes we get like with old animes, if they're like trying to re-bring them out, and then you get this new influx of, I don't want to say ignorant people, but this whole new influx of people who are trying to learn what it is. And then they try and like do shortcuts by like taking snippets of information off Wikipedia to try and pass it off as like, "Oh, well, you know, I've been there since the start."
There is actually an easy way to tell if they've been there from the start. Because if they've been there from the start, they'll know that the plural of anime and manga is anime and manga.
They won't know that. Anime is... Manga-nanas.
Manganese! Manganese!
It's all these manganeses.
So this manganese solution, will it make me better at manga?
I've got volume one of How to Draw Manga. I'm a professional.
Anyway, speaking of Godzilla.
Speaking of Godzilla, I got the chance, and a huge thanks to Netflix, because a few months ago I reviewed the first Netflix Godzilla.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix Godzilla, like it's a different breed of Godzilla.
Well, it is effectively. Well, no, actually, it's just Godzilla in the far, 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 far future, but not in a galaxy far, far away.
No, it's... So, basic premise, I'll do a quick recap of Godzilla 1. It is humanity, we've mistreated the environment. The environment's flung Godzilla at us, basically. And in our plight, we interacted with an alien race who tried to save us, but couldn't save us. So we all evacuated together in one big group and flew away from the Earth.
I'm just going to jump in here quickly, Tucky, because you've just given me a wonderful mental image of an old woman with, you know, those old medieval catapults and Godzilla just sitting in it with a crash helmet. And on the other side of the field, you've got humans.
Yeah, just like a trebuchet sort of thing.
Yeah.
Shout that, you buggers. That's for the plastic straws.
I want it on a t-shirt now.
But it's like the last summer of the 20th century. So we're already kind of past that point anyway. So no Godzilla so far. So real life's we're doing all right. But like I said, they've two species of alien, the Exif and the hope I pronounce this right, the Bilious Salyador, try to get us, basically humanity, to convert to their religion in a promise that they'll make Mecha Godzilla and defeat the real Godzilla, which doesn't work. They weren't able to activate Mecha Godzilla, so humanity and these aliens, they've all scarpered from Earth into space. And to them, I think it's like 20 years has passed. But because of the speed of space traveling, because time's a lot different in space, when they've planned to return, basically they've came back and it's like 20,000 years in the future. And yeah. Earth has changed. Basically, Godzilla's became the top of the food chain and the whole planet's had to evolve around Godzilla. So it's an interesting thing to come back to. And in the first movie, basically, it's humanity came back to Earth. In fact, we've now got a plan to face Godzilla. They now know all of his attacks, all of his weak points and whatnot. And he's pretty well equipped and well evolved at that point as it was. But now Godzilla's had like 20,000 years to evolve further. And like every predator that's on the planet is like a little part of Godzilla.
Yeah.
So it's proper like the park of monsters. From like the original Toho series of yeah. movies. And our hero Haruo Sakaki's turn around and he's like, I hate the fact that we've run away like cowards, you know, I want to go down, I'm gonna kill Godzilla. And this whole battle ensues for the first one, and they actually find Godzilla and beat it. Mm. However, at the end of the first one, and this is a spoiler if you haven't seen the first one. But basically, they kill Godzilla and turn around, and there's a mountain stirring. And it turns out the mountain's the actual, like, apex Godzilla. And the Godzilla that they've been facing all along is basically like a child. So they finish that on the whole cliffhanger of they're all screwed big style. But this is a trilogy of movies, and the second one, I believe it's City on the Edge of Battle or Battle for the City on the Edge or something like that. Basically follows on from the first one. Humanity's now got to recoup and basically turn around and have a decision. You can either scarper like the first lot because, you know, gigantic, like a size of a mountain Godzilla's now your enemy, or you can stay and fight. And they discover that there are humans who have survived, even though Godzilla's been ruler of the planet for 20,000 years. And even though the humans look primitive, they've went kind of tribal, so to speak.
Yeah. They've
got tattoos, but their brains have evolved to so we can now use telepathy. They use bugs for healing. You know, they don't use language anymore. Tied bits of rope is a great way to communicate. We've evolved that far. Even though our sense of fashion hasn't.
It's interesting because the tied bits of rope was the old Mayan communication, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's what they're trying to say. Like, you know, after 20,000 years, language now for humanity, it's like you just think at each other. Mm. And you know, it's Art Deco, a couple of bits of tied rope, which have different meanings.
Mm.
And we discover that humanity has naturally went underground. We're not fighting Godzilla. We're just working our way around Godzilla's like whims.
Yeah.
And you know, the air outside might be poisonous, but oxygen levels are better underground. There's still food there. You know, there's still a community and society. Obviously, there's not like 6-7 billion of us anymore. But humanity has survived. And the ground crew who faced the first Godzilla stumble across these humans who also have knowledge of where the original Mechagodzilla site is. Now, the thing with Mechagodzilla was they built him out of a nanometal. So it's kind of like a metal that learns.
Yeah.
And it's not only Godzilla that's been left for 20,000 years to evolve. This metal has been sitting there, evolving, running on a basic computer program to kill Godzilla. And it's created its own like camouflage. its own defense mechanisms, and it's basically it's built itself a city out of the corpse of Mechagodzilla, which was originally defeated all them years ago.
Mm.
So it's an interesting thing. And obviously, like, the aliens know how to use it and how the programming is, because they're the ones who tried Mechagodzilla originally. So they're like, okay, then we can use this city as a weapon against Godzilla. And so a plan's hatched and the plot goes, they've got to try Godzilla.
Sorry, they've got to what?
Trap Godzilla. Basically, trap him in. I believe they like make like a trench for him to walk along. And there, the big guns will hit him. And they've got the three vulture suits. It's all, the thing is, the CG animation in it makes it so much better. I mean, like we say, we're used to like the old ones, form costumes and dodgy fireworks and that. And it's came a long way. I mean, this I don't know if this is really considered the anime version, but it's a lot like CG, like the Knights of Cydonia kind of thing.
Yeah.
It makes it a better spectacle, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And the plot, it carries on from the first one, which I thought it was really good. Yeah, you know, if you read any other like commentary on it, it got slated quite a bit, which was surprising.
The thing is, I think that one of the reasons that it got slated, one of the things that I noticed when I watched the first movie, the main character, Haruo, I wouldn't call him my hero. My hero is obviously Godzilla. But the main character, Haruo, he was a lot like Eren from Attack on Titan.
Yeah, I noticed that he's revenge being the driving motive behind his actions.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, revenge is the only thing that defines him as a character, and that just makes for a very lackluster character. It's one of the reasons why I went off Attack on Titan, because Eren is just a one-dimensional character.
Yeah, but that's the thing with Eren, they've kept him as that one-dimensional character. With this one, the first movie was him all about revenge.
Yeah.
The second movie, they've developed his character into something a lot more, because it's really, if you watch it and pay attention to the little bits, there's a lot of Easter eggs there, and the changed humans into this whole, how do I put it? It's like kind of a juxtaposition with the character development. He becomes not so much rage, because obviously he's still trying to kill Godzilla. He's still trying to take the planet back, but for humanity. And I believe it's the Bilusalador aliens. They're the ones who are running this Mecha Godzilla, and they're this like species of logic, just called logic.
So Vulcans.
Yeah, it's like Vulcans, but Vulcans who go to the gym a lot, and their philosophies, like I say, it's called logic. It's straightforward, and the premise is to beat the big monster, you have to become the bigger monster. That's their way of thinking. And when you think about like human history in that context, it's like, well, yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah, but that doesn't apply to Godzilla, and I can prove why. See, throughout all of Godzilla's history, throughout all his fights, he's never been the bigger monster. The other monster has always been bigger, but Godzilla has continuously won. Do you know why? Because Godzilla suffers from a bad case of short monster's disease.
He's the Napoleon of monsters.
No. He's just, you know, the angry little guy at the pub who has a few pints and then starts picking a fight with everybody.
Aye.
Yeah, that's Godzilla.
So I've got Godzilla having a pint with Andy Cap now.
Yeah, but think about it. Mothra turns up, right? And Mothra is obviously just the nice guy who's just turned up. He's like, so, hey, you know, I'm a hero as well. Let's be friends. And Godzilla's going, I'm not being friends with you.
Nah. that's the way you think about it. Because, I mean, this Godzilla's like size of a mountain. You know, 20,000 years of evolution, and he's obviously had his ready break every single day.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me about something that you said, though, you know, when you were talking about the baby Godzilla and then the mountain moves, yeah?
Yeah.
That reminded me of Diebuster.
It is.
You know,
it's the classic thing, though. It's like, just as soon as you think you've vanquished the big enemy, a much bigger enemy turns up. It's the ultimate anime trope, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't
say you think you've beaten the bigger person, something bigger comes along.
I wouldn't
say Samurai Flamenco all over.
Yeah, it's Samurai Flamenco all over. But I think I think Diebuster is the one that I'd choose rather than Samurai Flamenco, because in Diebuster, it was literally what they thought was a space monster wasn't a space monster. And when they encountered the true space monster, the only thing that could actually go up against it was a proper buster machine.
Well, that's the thing. And in this one, in the second one, because I say it's a trilogy and there's another one to come, we find out who the Exif like ran from their home planet. Because there's this whole little back and forth between, I believe it was one of the Exif priests and that. He's like, I'm going to whisper into your ear, like the name of the monster that took our home world.
King
it's like
Ghidorah.
Basically, this monster makes Godzilla look like nout.
King Ghidorah, isn't it?
Well, I'm not going to spoil it. He whispers in his ear, and in the epilogue, they show that scene again, but where you actually hear what he whispers, and I think most people will be able to suss it out.
It's going to be King Ghidorah.
I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to spoil it. You may be right. You may be wrong.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch this now.
But that's basically like, you know, that's what I hope they're leading up to that whole thing. But for now, it's basically 20,000 years in the future, nano metal mecha Godzilla versus normal Godzilla. And it gets to this thing where, like, say, the character development, he realizes that he has to become, and they do this because the metal evolves. It basically, it takes over anything that it deems as not suitable, so to speak. So this nanometal has been taken down monsters, and whenever the humans died, you know, it just takes over their body and it uses their nutrients to make, like, more nanometal just from the... It's quite ego-friendly, but... in a bad way, and the humans who've lived on Earth throughout all of Godzilla's reign, they're afraid of this, like this metal, the shining city, and it's like an evil, and it comes to it where a choice has to be made at the end, where it's like you can either become part of Mecha Godzilla City, or you know you lose it, and like that's where I see it becomes more than revenge for him because he has an option. Where they can finish off Godzilla and the final battle's coming to a head. And Godzilla's like using his last attack, his Hail Mary, so to speak. This is the only way that Godzilla's getting out of it and they have a chance to finish him off, but that comes at a price. And it's this whole morality. And he's like, it wouldn't be human to kill Godzilla in the way that was proposed. Like I say, it's one that I'm trying not to spoil it.
Yeah. But I kind of get what you mean. I'm just going to jump in quickly here. This is one of my problems with anime when it comes to, well, with any story when it comes to morality. One of the reasons why I think Gunbuster did it really, really well. There are very few shows that actually approach it in the same way. Some of the Gundam series have also done it in a similar way to Gunbuster, where when you're in a battle for your very existence, when you are literally facing the extinction of your race, of humanity, or whatever race, and you don't have any options left. There's no time for niceties then.
Well, it's not, is it? It's primal animalistic instinct, isn't it? It's kill or be killed.
This is why I'm saying, you remember the final episode of Gunbuster with the black hole bomb? Now, this series has been out for over 20 years, so if you haven't seen it yet, there is a spoiler coming up. But, you know, go watch it. It's great.
Watch it anyway. It's amazing.
Yeah. The final episode, though, when they activate the black hole bomb and then the space monsters turn up, and the space monsters, up until then, you don't know anything about them. All the way through the series, you don't know anything about them. They don't communicate with anybody. They have no language that you know of. You just know that they are the enemy and they are winning, right? And then the space monsters turn up. And they've recognized the obvious threat to their existence, so they're launching kamikaze attacks against the black hole bomb. And the human fleet is trying to stop these attacks so they can activate the bomb and basically create a black hole in the center of the space monster's territory, thereby wiping out the majority of space monsters, ergo humanity is saved. Right? And that is what I'm talking about. They've basically, and in order to create the black hole bomb, what did they do? They collapsed the core of Jupiter.
A lot of a lot of planets just for the materials, just to get
They basically turned the entire solar system into a wasteland just for survival. So when it comes down to one guy, this is why I disagree with this whole idea. I mean, it was the same with Neon Genesis Evangelion. Do you know, during the Vietnam War, they tested with psychotropic drugs on military personnel to basically make them more amenable to committing certain acts, to doing certain things. And a lot of the documentation that you see regarding those drugs say they were antipsychotics and this and that and the other. No, they weren't.
No, LSD is not an...
Yeah.
That's the thing, though. It comes down to basic instinct. And the thing is, you would think, with this whole revenge angle in his character, that, you know, you wouldn't think second about becoming, like, a metal bomb. Like a human metal bomb. And it's one of the things, it's like, this metal, it disregards the weakest parts.
Yeah.
And obviously the human busk. The aliens are fine with it. They consider it an honor to be, to become part of this city. They, you know, it's logic for them. It's the next stage of evolution.
Yeah.
Discard the body and become like a consciousness, well, one with these nanometal.
But the thing is, that's basically...
He's human.
Yeah, that's basically the Borg. You know, mm-hmm. they become Borg, don't they, effectively?
Yeah. And I mean, Cybermen as well. We see it a lot.
Yeah.
Like the whole Legion kind of angle. Yeah. But this is where it gets, because like for me, like I say, this gets slated a lot. And I don't see, because a lot of the gripes, like, oh, there's not really much monster action. It's not, it's building up, it's building a world. Yeah. Like the whole angle that Godzilla is the result of environmental like misuse.
Yeah.
What if that was Earth's whole intention? What if Godzilla is Earth's self-defense?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I like the way you describe the world building. It's just little things like him suddenly having this morality when humanity is facing extinction. It's exactly the same.
That's the thing. It's not just for him.
Yeah,
it's also for his partner as well, who's also helping out. And there's like a small landing group.
Yeah, but
it's definitely building to something bigger.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Even with that, it's exactly the same as Shinji saying, I don't want to pilot Unit 01. Screw the rest of humanity. Let humanity die on the angels' attacks.
Yeah.
At that point, Gendo would have basically strapped him to a chair, injected him with all sorts, and brainwashed the crap out of him.
Well, they didn't do it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a third movie.
He didn't do it because Hideki Anno has to have his say. But we won't get into that.
No, it's just for me, this Netflix have done an amazing job. Like I say, graphics, animation, even the English dub voice cast was amazing. They've built it up. Watch the first one, watch the second one. Obviously,
first one was
like
great.
Say, it's a trilogy.
First one was great. I will agree with you. I watched the first one. The first one was great. I am looking forward to watching this one. I probably will just have that niggly fault of mine, but I probably will enjoy the rest of it.
Oh, no, by all means, I'm not saying it's perfect by any stretch, I should say, but it's got a good showing, and the thing is, it kept me entertained for 1.5 hours, and I don't really care if it's like loads of monster-on-monster battles or the action's like sparse. Like I say, the world building's there, the humanity that survived, they're there, you know, you get to see them, their evolution, you know, because to them, it's like, oh, they've been out in space for 20 years, but it's like being 20,000 years on Earth.
So let me just ask, are you saying then that the people who criticize this, that all they're really after is some hot kaiju-on-kaiju action?
I feel that it's down to, I just want senseless monster-on-monster violence.
No, hot kaiju-on-kaiju action, that's what they're after. Let's be fair.
I think Pacific Rim's ruined them. Not the other Pacific Rim, but the popular one.
Sorry, after what I just said, you saying Pacific Rim is just the wrong thing.
it's not all big mechs fighting monsters. This is the thing. Like we say, Godzilla used to be, and still can be, considered Earth's hero.
Yeah. Like,
Godzilla has to be the good guy. And the thing is, humanity should be seen as the enemy here. They keep the old Godzilla sound effects in. That's another plus.
Yeah.
The old Raw. How did they do that Raw originally?
Oh, it was...
It's really jarring. And the thing is, like, it's when they brought like Daleks back in Doctor Who, and they said, oh, they're really still scary. They're, like, these Godzilla, like, you know, he still is frightening. Like, the sheer power, and I don't know, it's just amazing that you can keep that kind of thing, even though, like, humanity's become desensitized to all bull crap.
Yeah.
And they still keep Godzilla scary in this day and age. It's a fantastic job they've done.
Awesome. So, my turn then?
Yep.
So, I have actually two series of One Piece, not just one. Collection 17 and 18 of One Piece. Now,
so, it's a two-piece.
It's a two-piece, yeah, not a one-piece. So, anyway, Collection 17 covers the episodes 397 to 421, and 18 covers 422 to 445. Now, Collection 17, it basically has a couple of extras. I'll get the extras out of the way first. It's got A Day in the Life of Zoro and In the Booth with Sonny Strait. So basically, it's got Chris Sabat and Sonny Strait talking about their roles as Usopp and Zoro. And it's got episode commentaries for four of the episodes as well. So it's got some decent extras on there. The series starts at the auction house on Shabadoy Archipelago, and with that punch.
Aha! So right. Now I know where we are.
Right. So now you know. Hachi has just been shot by one of the Celestial Dragons, and Luffy punches that Celestial Dragon through his big fat helmet right into his big fat face, and that then starts everything off, because at that point, he's basically signed what is effectively a death warrant for everybody on that island, right? Mm-hmm. Because the Marines will literally send out a buster call. Now, through Robin's storyline, I think we've already established what a buster call is. So that basically goes on. And it goes on towards the end. Basically, Luffy's joined by Trafalgar Law and Eustace Kidd. And they're basically called the worst generation, the most horrible generation. In amongst the middle of this, if I remember, there are a couple of episodes where basically, it goes on to the final days of the Straw Hat crew. And then after the final days of the Straw Hat crew, it goes on to a couple of these... Because up till then, it's basically the fight against the Marines to try and escape Shabadoy Archipelago. And then it goes on to that episode, the final days of the Straw Hat crew. And
so it's the where the time skip, where the halfway point to your
not
time
quite,
skip kind
not,
of area.
Not quite. There are a few things to happen first. So... you're at the final days of the Straw Hat crew. Then there are a couple of episodes of kind of Edo period, One Piece. So it's basically, it's like a side story for One Piece, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's called the Special Historical Arc. And there, you know, it's kind of a couple of filler episodes just to kind of cleanse the palate a little bit and have a bit of fun before you move on to the next bit. And then it gets on to the next bit, which is basically Luffy waking up, and Luffy has, because the person that they have to fight in the final days is Bartholomew Kuma.
The bear fruit guy.
Yeah. And if you've been reading the manga, then Kuma's story is actually more tragic than you think.
Especially in the latest chapters, actually.
Yeah. What happens then is that Luffy wakes up, and he is actually... somewhere he didn't expect, because he's ended up in the place where Sanji always wanted to end up. And then, yeah, basically he is on the island of the Amazons. And he is an unwitting guest of Boa Hancock, the pirate empress. And, yeah.
it makes it interesting, because the whole crew's blasted off to literally all corners of the world.
Yeah, they are. But this is the thing, I think it's towards the end of this particular collection, it has four episodes, which talk about where the other characters are.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of like a diary of the Straw Hat crew.
Yeah, the crewmates' whereabouts, those episodes are called. But it's during this arc that the foundation is laid. I mean, this whole Shabadoy Archipelago, the entire bit from Water 7 onwards is basically some of One Piece's stuff, some of Oda's best work from Water 7 onwards. So from Water 7 to Enies Lobby, then from Enies Lobby to Shabadoy Archipelago, from Shabadoy Archipelago, it's basically a solo adventure at that point for Luffy. Because the other crew aren't
leading up to the big battle in Marineford.
Yeah, because when he's at the island of the Amazons, he learns that Blackbeard has captured Ace and become one of the warlords, and Ace is scheduled for execution and is being held in the worst prison in the world Impel Down. So, that brings us on to Collection 18, which is Luffy sneaking into Impel Down.
So, some of the best character development in this arc.
Yeah, this is the arc when you find out what proper friendship is, I think, or what it should be in anime because of Bonclair.
Definitely stand out. Because it's fun because they revisit like all the old... The Alabaster arc. And it's you actually see like a result of that. It's not just left as, oh, well, Crocodile was caught. It's like, no, Crocodile and all his henchmen were caught and they were imprisoned in Impel Down.
Yeah.
And each one's got their own like different punishment.
Yeah.
Because Impel Down's like all the levels of hell, supposedly, like five, but they've got five instead of the usual eight or nine.
For the first few episodes of this, of Collection 18, it is basically Luffy sneaking into Impel Down that introduces the Warden Magellan and various other characters. But then it takes a sharp left turn for a couple of episodes because at this point in the actual airing of the One Piece series, there was a movie coming out. A movie that spawned a lot of cosplay of people dressed as mafioso, but also as One Piece characters. You know which movie I'm talking about?
Is this the One Piece movie?
Yeah, it's a One Piece movie. Which one am I talking about?
Oh, it's the one before the gold, isn't it?
No, because that was Zed before gold.
Oh. Is it the Chinese one?
Nope.
Because I remember they did like a whole... Because they have like different costume art styles for each different movie.
How about I tell you, there were four movie-connected special episodes. And the first one was the main one that was connected to the movie and involved Golden Lion Shiki. Because the movie was Strong World.
Yeah, well, that's the one.
Yeah. So there's four episodes of that, and then it goes back. And I can forgive the four episodes because the movie, actually, Strong World wasn't a bad movie. It was fun. But it wasn't as good as Zed. I think Zed is probably my favourite One Piece movie.
I'd have to go with Gold.
I don't think Gold. I think Zed is better than Gold because Zed actually had a character. It had an antagonist that was far more of a character than the majority in Gold.
I don't know. I like Gold. I like it just for the zaniness of it.
Yeah.
Just like, welcome to my casino, have you sell a road race on my ship.
That's why I think Zed works better for me because it's a more serious story. It's not as madcap and wacky as the usual One Piece fare, and I think having that seriousness every now and then, it's one of the reasons why the Marineford arc, well, this entire the run up to Marineford is, in my opinion, some of Oda's best. So anyway, it continues on, and Luffy is basically heading down through the levels of Impel Down to try and find Ace and Bonclay. He runs into Bonclay, and they basically run down together because Bonclay regards Luffy as one of his best friends. And
might have been enemies before, but it's that thing though. It's weird the way it worked because they just happened by chance to meet each other.
Yeah,
on a ship. Didn't know they were enemies. They decided like, oh, come aboard and we'll have a party. Oh, why not? And it's not like a deep friendship kind of thing. It's not like, oh, you know, yeah, I've known you since like I was young and whatnot, and that kind of friendship. It's just like the kind of that bloke bought us a pint the other night. I'll remember that in the future.
Yeah.
That kind of friendship. But obviously, with them being in prison, it's a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, it's like, well, they might as well have known each other from birth.
Yeah. I really love Bonclair's character. His Japanese name is Bentham, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah, his Japanese name is Bentham, if I remember rightly. But I really love Bonclair just because... he's a character that truly understands what friendship should be like in these sorts of shows. This ends with the episode where Blackbeard meets Shiryu of the Rain. So I'm not going to go into any more than just telling you that is the title of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a spoiler because at this point I haven't mentioned who Shiryu of the Rain is. The episodes really are increasing in tension. With every episode, things are getting more and more serious with every episode. And yes, there are still those elements of humor being injected into One Piece, but it's still pushing and pushing and pushing for that intensity that you really want to see from One Piece. And the fact that Luffy's by himself, he doesn't have his crew or anything like that. He's got no backup.
I think that really helps with the character development as well, because up until then, he's just been like this kind of happy-go-lucky captain who has like friends to rely on.
Yeah.
When you see him put into that kind of situation where he's alone, it's kind of a crisis that involves a family member, and he's in a situation. He's still got friends, but he would have, you know, even if like he knew no one in that prison, he would have still fought his ass off to get right to the bottom to save Ace.
Yeah. So we're not going to go into detail about what happens next, because if you want to know, buy the collections, watch them. Buy collection 19 and 20 because they're well worth it. Collection 18 actually has some extras as well. The extras on collection 18, there's the 4 more episode commentaries, which are fun to watch and listen to. But it's also got a couple of segments. Chopper plays Doctor, which is Brina Palencia, with purple hair, if I remember rightly. And for some reason, she's got a face mask. But she's basically talking about playing Chopper for so long, and also cooking with Sanji, which is great because you have the guy who plays Sanji actually cooking.
Eric Vale.
Yeah, Eric Vale actually cooking.
He was at Digicon this year as well. Well, not the one that's coming up, but the one that's just been.
Yeah.
He's a fun character. We've never actually met him. It's just weird because we've actually met, like, through SunnyCon, we've met all of Funimation practically. Like, when you were saying Chris and Sunny doing commentary, I can imagine that to be quite funny because they are genuinely funny people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chris makes the point of saying that he has nothing in common with Zoro as a personality, as a character, as anything. So it's bizarre.
No, I can quite say that, actually, because Zoro's like a serious character who gets lost a lot. Yeah. From what we know of Chris, he knows his way around even strange places. That sounds weird when I word it like that. He's very good with the old GPS.
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Anyway, the fact that I've been talking about One Piece, it does lead me to ask the question, because it's a question that everyone keeps asking to me. So I'm asking you, Tucky. Well, actually, I'm going to break it down into two questions. Number one, One Piece will end at some point. Fairy Tail has already pretty much finished and is being replaced by Eden Zero, which is basically Fairy Tail in space. You think we wouldn't notice that?
We did. Hero, yes. What are you playing at?
Yeah. You think we can't tell that Urza Scarlet and Elsie Crimson are basically the same?
It's like that meme, can I copy your homework? Yeah, just don't make it obvious.
Yeah. There's that new show which is basically Bleach, but we're witches, isn't it?
Oh, what show is that?
Oh, I can't remember the name of it. That's how memorable it was.
Well, we've got like Black Clover's like kind of being installed as one of, because it's that old formula of the big three, isn't it?
Yeah, and my question is, do we need something to replace One Piece and Bleach and Naruto and that? Is it actually necessary?
I'd say no. And the reason behind that is because when back in the, some people call it the golden age of anime, you had the Naruto, Bleach and One Piece. And they kind of like overshadowed it all. And for a while, especially when Naruto, it was really good.
Can I just point out,
had some decent story.
Yeah. I actually talked about the Golden Age of Anime with Rob from Cinema Eclectica and Press X and that yesterday, in fact. And he actually pointed something out to me. He said the early to mid to late 90s were a golden age for anime because you can list numerous shows from that period that you would class as you must watch this show, yeah? Can you do that with this other golden age of anime?
Well, it's not really a golden age. That's the thing.
What defines a golden age is when you actually have, because he actually clarified it, he said, look, they have the same thing in movies and in comics and stuff like that. You have these periods that are called golden ages, but during those golden ages, there are certain runs, there are certain shows, there are certain movies that are absolutely essential viewing or reading. These are things that you must watch, otherwise you can't really call yourself a fan. And I can't think of anything from the last 15-odd years that I would class as essential viewing in anime.
Well, that's the thing, because it's partly because of the changing landscape. The whole media's evolved on. We now have streaming, dubs are made faster, Quality's gone down a bit, but some quality's gone up in places. Studios have come, studios have gone.
Oh, no. I tell a lie. There are two things I can think of that I would class as essential viewing. Only two. From 15 years of anime, or maybe longer, Mushishi I would class as essential viewing because it does a lot of things very, very well. It basically shows mastery in a lot of different areas. And Aria the Origination, but in order to appreciate just how good that series is, you have to watch Aria the Animation and Aria the Natural first.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just sit there and watch Aria the Origination and actually understand just the true mastery behind the directing in that series. You can't get it unless you watch the first two shows.
Well, that's the issue, though, because, like we're saying, these big three, they were mainstream, and it was kind of like a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon to watch them.
Mm.
The quality was good to start with, but then it kind of wanes, especially Bleach. Like, what the hell happened there? Taikubo answers on a postcard. It was popular, but then it kind of lost its spark, and then this is the thing, the big shows, One Piece is the only mainstay that's actually managed to last and come out unscathed. Like Naruto, the quality went down. There was so much filler in the anime, like so much. Like, it was ridiculous. People are sitting there reading the manga, getting ahead, and then suddenly the anime is catching up, and they're like, oh, no, we can't catch up to the manga. Stick so much filler in. And at the end, it just became like this one thing where it's like, oh, it's ultimate weeb watch stuff. You know, you're a weeb if you watch Bleach. And it became a negative at the end of it. It was that thing. It became that popular that it became crap.
Yeah.
It just imbibed itself. And it's still kind of seen that way, especially for Naruto. But the thing was, it sold. And they've done, when Naruto ended, this was only like 2-3 years ago, when it all ended, when I read the last chapter, I thought, right, well, that's it. Thank God for that. You know, I've made it. I don't have to watch anymore. And then within months, they've brought Boruto out. And you kind of think, like, you can only flog that horse so much.
Yeah.
And yes, there is obviously the world's been built. A lot of things have been established. But, you know, just let it die. For God's sake, let it die. Because we don't need a big three anymore. We can watch anime anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can walk in on you watching anime now and you don't have to be ashamed.
Well, you do, depending on what you're watching, okay?
Yeah. If you're watching Camphor, then, you know, you shouldn't be watching it.
No. If you're sitting there in your pants and you're watching Senran Kagura, then you should be deeply, deeply ashamed and disappointed with yourself.
Yeah, you don't realise how close you are to the BBC doing a whole, like, segment on you being an absolute disgrace to humanity. But it's...
I think they do. I think they do.
But better. But it's one of those things. People still look to it and go, oh, so what's the big three anime now? Because it's an easy point of reference. It's like, oh, well, One Piece is still there. And Dragon Ball Supers came back out, which I don't classify as one of the big three. I know there's a lot of fans about it. But most of the new fans are ruining it. Because the old fans used to be, yeah, I watched it on Toonami, and it was R8, and then I watched JT, and then I kind of got over it. But then they, like, did this whole, we're rebooting the whole universe thing, but we're not rebooting it, we're mashing it all together, and buy more merchandise. You know,
that's literally what I'm saying. It's all basically much of a muchness now. And I'll be honest, there are very few shows that I really want to sit down and watch from this season. I think Izakaya Nobu is one of the ones that I would have chosen to watch because it's all about food and yes, okay, it's in another world, but it's not the same as, what was the name of the other one? Restaurant to Another World.
Restaurant to Another World, yeah.
It's not quite the same as that. There's the reboot of Yamato, which, you know, I'm thoroughly enjoying.
That's the thing, I've been this season alone now, I haven't really got round to watching anything.
Yeah.
There's nothing really stand out. It's one of the things I was saying, Naruto, Bleach and One Piece.
Yeah.
They were all really long running. If you take like people like these days, they like things like to be short. And there's a lot of things for like Your Lie in April, Erased, you know, the kind of 12 to 13 episode series.
Yeah.
They're powerful, they invoke so much emotion, but they're bite-sized. You don't have to have this whole, like, 300 odd episodes and 200 more of filler.
Thing is,
these series can do it in 12 episodes or less.
Thing is, don't get me wrong, I think that there is still space for one or two shows that run for 100, 200 plus episodes, right? I think there is still space for a few shows like that. But I don't think it's the same as it was before. Take One Piece, for example. It's all but caught up with the manga now. So they're going to have to do some kind of filler thing or take a break so that the manga can continue ahead.
Well, that's the issue, though. He's working his backside off, and corporate won't allow it. Because they've got to push merch. They're making so much money. I mean, he's absolutely loaded. He's got a little train in his house. There was actually on Twitter a picture of him and a couple of the voice actors who, for One Piece, actually sitting having a barbecue, sitting on a little toy train in his back garden.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I didn't realize that Planet With actually has an anime series.
Does it?
Yeah, Planet With has an anime series, which means I must watch this.
That's the thing, kind of shows that you can actually just pick out and say, I'd love to watch that.
No, do you know why I must watch this?
Why must you watch it?
Because the manga for Planet With is by the mangaka who did a manga that I think has the most amazing name. The manga was created by the guy who did Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer. The Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer.
All right. So is this basically the Devil Gans to the Fox's
no.
factory? Just that's why we've got a gingerbread crisis right now.
No, the Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer is a lot darker than it sounds. It's one of those rare manga where essentially it's shonen, but it crosses the territory into seinen in a lot of ways. You have characters that basically sacrifice themselves, that die. It's got a lot of elements of, say, Boccarano in there. There's a certain horrifying nature to it.
Gonna have to get in that. I'm trying to get into Golden Kamuy because Mark's been...
Golden Kamuy's great.
He's been plugging it a lot, and I started reading the manga because I'm not watching the anime because, I like to read the manga first. And the whole premise of, ex-immortal military soldier has to find gold, hooks up with a local lass, and the way they get the map is by killing prisoners and skinning them. I absolutely love that kind of premise. I don't know why, but it's like, yes, I'm all about it. And now I get the dodgy CG bear references that keep popping up on my timeline, and I've never gotten. So I've learned a bit this week.
Yeah.
But it's like I say, it's back to the question of doing either the big three and that. It's I think we've evolved to the point where the only things that'll generate interest are going to be the shorter series. I mean, even webcomics that can be classified as anime, because there's an interesting webcomic that I've just gotten into, and I can't remember the name of it because I don't have it on me. I've got it on my bookmarks, but it's about a YouTube personality.
Yeah.
And it shows the side of, because he basically plays this developer's game. He plays the game incorrect and slates the game. And then all of his fanboys and fangirls and all his subscribers start basically ruin this game developer's life.
Hmm.
Her score is absolutely trashed. And then he moves house, and it just happens he's moving next door to this game developer. Hmm. And she absolutely hates him for it. I can't remember the name. I think it's Player One or something. Ready Player One? Not Ready Player One.
I was going to say, please don't mention that.
No, not that rubbish. I'll have to look it up, and if I can find it. But I never usually get into webcomics, that's a thing. It's just this one because it was about YouTube, and it's very realistic in its storytelling. And it is one of them things. It's basically if PewDiePie told his fans to kill you, they would.
Yeah.
that kind of thing. It's that kind of angle. He doesn't tell them directly to go Slater. But people are just douches on the internet and go out the way to harm her career. And it's quite an interesting back and forward going on, and they're doing a lot of character development. So it's that kind of show that I'd love to be seeing made into an anime, but it's a webcomic, and it's not from the traditional source of the manga or the light novels that we usually see. And I'd like to see the evolution of the medium to go to more towards that, and we might see more Western cartoons sort of being made in anime. I mean, they've already done it with Ruby.
Well, I'm not trying to be a purist here, but what I'd love to see is, well, number one, what I'd love to see, more exposure of the Chinese and Korean animation markets, because they are producing some great stuff. And if you're only focusing on Japan, you're not seeing it, right?
There's a lot of national politics involved.
It's not just the national politics that are involved. The Western fans really don't care about the national politics between Japan, Korea, and China, right?
Oh, we don't, but...
That's what I'm saying. Like... I'm not talking about the fans in the East. I'm talking about the Western fans. There is a lot of good stuff in China and a lot of good stuff in Korea. It doesn't get any of the exposure because we're so heavily focused on Japan. What I'd love for the Japanese studios to do is to go back to how they were during the 90s, when they really opened their minds and they started exploring and started being more inclusive with shows like Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star, things like that, where they were accessible to everybody. Rather than saying, I want more Western anime, things like Ruby and Avatar and stuff like that, rather than saying that, I want more anime to be inclusive for everybody so that it doesn't matter whether you are from the East or the West. You can watch it. Space Dandy is a great example of an inclusive anime because it didn't matter whether you were from the East or the West. You could enjoy it for what it was.
A more
global perspective. Set these shows in countries that aren't Japan or America. Right.
Yeah. No high school.
Well, not even that. I mean, look at shows like El Cazador de la Bruja or Michiko and Hatchet. You know, look at other shows like Witch Hunter Robin. Chrono Crusade, for example, is set in Chicago, but it's not set in modern day Chicago, is it?
No.
And then you've got Bacano, which again is not set in modern day America. Bacano's set in the 1930s, 1940s, something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the just after the Wall Street crash.
There's this entire wealth of geography and history that you can choose from. And it's very narrow of creators to only focus on specific things just because.
Well, that's a thing that sells, though, because, well, that's not actually the thing that sells.
That's my point.
More diverse stories from different parts of the world. But it's that national thing. It's a multi-billion dollar industry to Japan. And I don't know if they'll be like afraid to really try something and push the boat out taking inspiration from places like Korea or China or even somewhere in the West.
I'm not saying they're taking inspiration from Korea or China. They have all the inspiration they need already just from their own back catalogue. They don't need anybody else to teach them. It's like teaching a granny to suck eggs. I still don't know what that phrase means. So if anybody out there knows what that means, just explain it to me, right? Because no one will. But anyway, as I was saying, the Japanese don't need anybody to teach them how to do anime that's inclusive of its audience. They know how to do that. They have those shows on hand already. If anyone asks, just get them to play Kids on the Slope or something like that. I can list a whole heap of shows that appeal to both Eastern and Western audiences. You know? Mm-hmm. It's just the studios. You have people who basically are so focused on the traditional idea that the otaku, the rich otaku over in Japan, are the ones who supported the industry and still support the industry. That's no longer the case. You have a Western market, so use it.
Yeah, if they can back it up with financials, then
they can.
They
actually can back it up with financials. We've seen the reports. The reports have been published.
It's got to be the next growth industry. I mean, we're looking at... this weekend going on San Diego Comic-Con, there's a huge anime interest there.
Yeah.
Especially for like a comic convention.
But this is the thing. The interest is already there. The numbers are already there. We already know anime is a huge growth industry. And the proof of that is, you remember that Cantona video I sent you, right?
Yeah.
When you have a major footballing name like Eric Cantona in one of his YouTube videos about the World Cup, referencing Captain Tsubasa.
There's a huge celebrity attraction. Like, just Cantona, like we're seeing Michael B. Jordan for the Black Panther movies. He's a huge anime fan. Also, just this weekend, like I'm saying, San Diego Comic-Con, Chris Sabat, he's with Kofi Kingston.
Yeah. And then, you know, in wrestling, you had Ronda Rousey wearing the Over 9000 t-shirt at WrestleMania. You have Sasha Banks, who's a dyed-in-the-wool, diehard Sailor Moon fan. You have The New Day, who are massive Dragon Ball fans, even going so far as to don Saiyan armor when they made one of their entrances.
It wasn't just Saiyan armor, they did a Final Fantasy cosplay as well the year after.
Do you see what I mean? Anime is a massive industry. It has a lot of big names. It has a lot of celebrities who have grown up with anime now. And so the Japanese studios need to be less hidebound and more inclusive. That's the only way for the industry to progress. And that doesn't mean to say that they have to sacrifice their vision. They can still produce the shows that make the Japanese audience happy.
Yeah.
Because...
Like you were saying, there is a lot of potential there. And if they can hack into that celebrity fan base, because it's not just wrestling, it's not just anime. I think it was, what's his name? There's a player for Sunderland who actually has anime boots for his national team. Yeah. Brian Oviedo.
Yeah.
He has, like, this actual proper football boots.
He's got Itasha
anime characters on.
Yeah, no, he's got Itasha boots, I know.
That blew me away instantly. Yeah. It's like, whoa, football and the no anime?
Yeah, but that's the thing. He's actually got Itasha boots. And if you are listening to this and you don't know what Itasha means, it's where they put like their favourite anime characters on cars. Right.
Yeah, it's becoming more mainstream. And if they can, I mean, there's one of the running backs, I think, for the Steelers in America who goes to conventions and cosplays fun. And... All you need to do is turn around and get one of these agents. Say, look, will you promote my new anime? Cygames, the people who make Pretty Derby, interesting. The transfer of Cristiano Ronaldo from Real Madrid to Juventus. Cygames sponsor Juventus?
Yeah.
So they're standing there holding up Cristiano Ronaldo's shirt and on the back underneath his name and number, they're Cygames. And I'm watching, I'm thinking, Pretty Derby.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. It's no longer just a little playground. And like I said, they could still keep making the shows that make the Japanese audiences happy. And the reason why they can make those shows is because the Western audiences have become more appreciative of Japanese culture and of the way that Japanese people approach things. There are a lot of things that are positive about Japanese culture and society.
There are negative things as well.
But that's the same with any society. I mean, if you look at American society, the big negative is obviously Donald Trump.
But you can look beyond that, and there's caring people, different political spectrums. It's just politics is
Politics is the big divider in America. But it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat. There are lovely people on either side. But we won't dwell on that.
No. We'll not go into politics this time.
The simple fact is... Anime is on the verge of actually becoming a mature medium. This is fascinating for me to watch it happen. It is actually on the verge of becoming a mature medium like video game. Well, video games has only just become a mature medium. Anime is on the verge of doing that. And, you know, in the same way that comics have, in the same way that films have, in the same way that television has. And
it's been interesting watching it over the years because when we started... We always had that stigma of it's either it's just for kids or it's too adult.
See, I had this conversation with my mum. My mum's in her 70s, right? And she's very stuck in her ways. Because we were watching a news report on, I think it was Euronews, a couple of weeks ago. And I said, look, the world is changing, Mum. Cartoons are no longer for kids. And she said... How do you mean? I said, pretty soon you're going to see cartoons on TV that are aimed at adults like me. She goes, why would you watch cartoons? They're for kids, aren't they? I said, no. These cartoons are going to have violence. They're going to have death. They're going to have mature themes. They're going to have all sorts in them. These cartoons are definitely not for kids. And then her reaction was, well, why would they make these cartoons and have kids watch them? I said, no, they're not for kids. They won't be shown at times when kids are away.
They put the age limits on them. That's the thing.
I explained it to her. I said, it's the same as video games, right? Video games have an age rating, and if your child is under that age, they shouldn't be playing that game. So, if you buy that game for your child, you have no right to complain that your child is playing a game where he goes around shooting people in the head. you've got no right to complain because you bought that game for them. Likewise, if you let your children watch these cartoons thinking all cartoons are for kids, and then they start having nightmares about violence or whatever, that's on you. You should have checked on this first. The cartoon wouldn't be shown at 11 o'clock in the evening otherwise, and what, your kids still booing awake at 11 o'clock?
It's just bad parenting.
Yeah.
I know that. I had two kids of my own. It's funny because, I mean, I'm saying like BBC articles, the Doki Doki Literature Club Ferrari that's been going on recently.
I don't know about this.
You don't know?
No.
Oh, right. Well, basically, there's this, could you call it a dating sim called Doki Doki Literature
Club? Oh, actually, I do know about this, yeah.
Yeah, and it's I mean, just for listeners from further afield, it's basically in the UK, there was a case of a young lad who's committed suicide. And rather than look at the multitude of reasons, they discovered that this kid had been playing Doki Doki Literature Club, which is an 18-plus video game. And it has themes such as suicide and death in it. And obviously they've made the loose connection and the BBC's decided to go full out and go, oh, this Japanese animation video game's harming our kids. I mean, there's no actual direct link, and the coroner's office hasn't said, well, it's directly from this video game, but, you know, we need controversy. So let's just say it's the video game's fault rather than actually looking at, like, external factors like, was he bullied at school? Were the parents just D-bags? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of old-style kind of thing that we see. The mainstream British media usually goes after things of Japanese culture and games and that. And if it does have any negative connotations, they will push that agenda.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we leave it there?
Yes, we shall leave it.
All of our shows are available on our website and Apple Podcasts and Audioboom. Our website is thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all sorts of other stuff, including all the other shows on our network. You also find our Patreon and our shop as well, which has some interesting ways. There's different ways you can support us if you choose to. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on social media, or you can just go to Twitter and go direct to
@KeyframePodcast.
Or you can email us direct on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Until next time, when maybe we will have more people, but, you know, do we really need them, Tucky? Do we? Do we?
Do we need a big two or just...
Well, do we need another two? Isn't just me and you good enough?
We'll see. I'm thinking Mark's going to edit this. He's going to be, oh.
That's why I'm saying it.
I'm sorry, Mark.
We're only teasing. We love you, really. But, yeah, until next time, I have been Rob.
And I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Goodbye.